a special holiday edition of the GGB News, the industry's first and longest-running podcast now in our 17th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and today we sit down with Earl Hall, the CEO of Axis AI, on how his groundbreaking company is providing data services to the casino industry and pioneering cloud technology. Today's podcast is sponsored by IGT, where the cat's out of the bag. IGT's Prosperity Link wins gold and is named Best Slot Product by GGB's Gaming and Technology Awards. Get this top performer on your floor. Learn more at igt.com/prosperitylink. I'll be there to shine the land that they've been giving away. We all live together, talking together now. Earl Hall was named one of GGB's 25 people to watch for 2023, and it was a long time coming. Hall has been in gaming more than 20 years, figuring out how data can improve operations, customer service, and technology in the industry. Axis AI provides anti-money laundering services, player loyalty efficiencies, marketing campaigns, real-time rewards and promotions, and transparent transactions. Hall, whose background is in the Canadian military, is an inspirational leader whose impact on gaming is only going to get stronger. He spoke with GGB managing editor Jess Marquez in December. Can you play their games without losing
track and coming down a bit? Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the GGB podcast. I am Jess Marquez, managing editor of GGB. It's December, and that means 2023 is on the horizon, and that also means that it's time to do our annual 25 people to watch list. Today's guest is someone who I always love to talk to. I think he's one of the more innovative and interesting minds in the industry today. None other than Earl Hall, CEO of Axis AI, one of the leading data management companies and software companies in the industry today. They got a wide range of facets, obviously, from data management to cashless and beyond. Earl, how are you doing today? And first off, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. The only way I would ever accept something like this is if it's in the name of my team. I'm very grateful, but at the same time, I want to make sure that this is something that I drag forward as a part of what my team and myself have accomplished.
Well, and that kind of, that's interesting how you say that, because it ties into kind of how I wanted to start today's interview. And that is, I understand you're a veteran in Canada. And, you know, I come from a military family. I have a lot of veterans in my family. I have a ton of respect for service, you know, whether it be in the U.S. or beyond. And that kind of that mindset that you said, that team-based mindset, is kind of indicative of a military background, at least from my experience. So you served 9 years with Canada's Department of National Defense. Can you kind of talk about that experience a little bit and just kind of how it shaped your, you know, the rest of your career moving forward?
Sure. Well, I come from a little tiny place that not very many people know about. It's called the Island of Newfoundland in Canada. So back in the early 1980s, there was not a lot of opportunity back then to actually go to university, get great grants and loans. And at the same time in high school, I had some friends that were prodding me towards, you know, there's ways of going to university if you want to go into the military. And I went, oh, okay, I'll look at that. And I ended up at a French military college, which was another major shock in my life because I had to learn a different language to function. But that taught me so much those years at military college, the Canadian version of West Point. It doesn't matter how much of a superstar you are, you're just a number in the average of the overall team. And it's funny how the Army taught me is the superstars that were seeking all the attention, they ended up failing. And of course, the most weak, well, they had trouble keeping up physically or mentally or whatever. But the spread between the superstar and the latecomer or the person lagging behind, the spread wasn't that much. And that's where the notion of teamwork was really burnt into my brain, carried on in the Army. And probably the greatest thing that I've had in my career is I've always managed or lucked in to having the greatest of mentors you would ever believe. Like at the Royal Military College, there was a couple. Then in my military career, it was Romeo Dallaire, the famous general from the genocide in Rwanda. So My military career was really the basis of who I am, that discipline, that way of doing things, that rigor, that always checking up, always following up, always trying to explain the why of things. Well, I think it was that amazing schooling I got from there that gave me that.
That's great. That's great. It's really interesting. And so you moved from there and you kind of jump into what I would just kind of broadly categorize as, you know, the computer science and tech world. You had a lot of different experiences, whether it be with IT, 3D modeling in some senses. So kind of what was that transition like, and what kind of was the impetus behind that that first transition?
So probably the craziest thing when you read my LinkedIn is that I've been in tech my entire life, and I don't really have any education in tech. And there's a simple reason for that. I started programming when I was 14.
Okay.
So I've been programming all my life in the Army. I was delegated projects to build networks, take care of networks. When I got out of the military to return to school, I started working in heavy IT right away, and I was always doing my Microsoft engineering courses, but I would always only get the piece I needed. So that the thing about when you're in management is you need to keep your eyes well above the horizon to see the future. But when required, you need to be able to dig so far down into the weeds that you can fix the precise micro issue and just get right back after looking at the general. So the thing that I think, and I'd have to credit, I won't take credit for this, I'll credit my dad for this, but my dad always taught me that if you can't do the job yourself, you can't lead. So, and that's something I think was instilled into me at a very young age, that leadership is by example. So probably one of the hardest parts of my entire career is that I don't impose things on my own team that I can't do. So I'll go through copious levels of pain to learn something or to do something, because when they need advice, they actually don't need you to talk. They need you to intelligently listen, because most people can figure out their own issues just by talking about them. But to be able to ask the right questions, I still spend between an hour and 2 hours a day, 5 to 7 nights a week, still studying every night. Why? Because the kids coming out today have a more broader education. They have a lot more exposure to things that we had in my day. So that puts a lot more pressure on the executives today to be able to give them the type of mentoring, coaching, leadership support that they really deserve, because the leadership model has changed so much over the last few years that if you're looking for a boss sitting with a stapler and with a stamper and with a highlighter, I think that thankfully died during COVID.
The cat's out of the bag. IGT's Prosperity Link wins gold, named the best slot product by GGB's Gaming and Technology Awards. A top game performer since being released, Prosperity Link features the player favorite lock and respin bonus and the exciting free games bonus with either scatter or multiplier wilds. Prosperity Link will drive players to your floor with this popular game mechanics. Grab this exciting game while it's hot. Learn more at igt.com/prosperitylink.
So now, you know, obviously you made the jump. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, obviously, but I believe it was early 2000s range. You moved into gaming specifically with DEQ Systems, with Table Game Technology. What was the, you know, the inspiration to get into gaming specifically?
The story behind that was completely nuts, because it all started off with a bombing in the Middle East. All started off with me having to evacuate to Jordan. Wow. And ended up with me being in Quebec City trying to figure out what was my next step. Wow. And I was sitting in Quebec City and somebody just showed up and said, Earl, can you please read this patent for me? Because there's this company, we're getting ready to list them off the stock market. But he goes, can you read this patent? So I said, yeah, I don't care. I read the patent. And as you know, in the patent world, the most important thing is to find dependencies. In other words, where can there be friction with things that were invented before? But this patent and the other patents around it had almost no friction. So I told the folks at PricewaterhouseCoopers, I said, do not delist this company. I said, find somebody who knows what they're at. I said, you're sitting on gold. It's just been badly started off as a project for all of the very credible reasons that they had back then. But the project just needed to be reframed and retooled, rebranded, and done the right way. Unfortunately, because I gave my opinion and I wrote them a paper on it and I actually gave them pointers on how to do it, well, they asked me to do it. So I showed up at G2E in 2004 and I looked like a deer in the headlights. I'd never been in a casino before, had never seen a machine before. Table games were a very foreign concept to me. And it was probably two of the most painful years of my entire life, because you cannot function in gaming if you don't have the entire patent landscape in your head. So I got in by a complete accident, but then I found an industry that, even though, like, outside of the industry, the gaming industry gets a bad rap for money laundering and addiction and all those things that have their little micro parts of the bad with the good. Just like if you own a restaurant, that people might get drunk and kill someone with a hit and run. All of those things happen. But what I found in this industry, and once again, I have to call out the person responsible, because I don't take a lot of responsibility for the good fortune that I've had. I get paid to be responsible for the bad stuff. So I lucked into one of the greatest three mentors of my entire career. His name is Mike Talismanic. He started off his career as Elvis's bodyguard and worked his way on up with Bill Hara, opened up properties all over the world for Genting. This gentleman was instrumental in my entire life because he framed up gaming for me in a way I could understand it. But what he taught me the most is this is the industry that probably has the most heart that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
When you see the care of a casino manager, and I'll never forget, and I'm sorry to call out Debbie Nutton, but I was walking the floor with Debbie Nutton once at the MGM, and she was in this amazing pant outfit with a blazer, and there was a tissue over in a corner on the floor. And she completely went left and walked over, picked up the tissue and put it in her pocket, and just walked on with it and put it in the garbage with later. And those lessons from 2004 to about 2008, and I could tell you 100 of these stories. You're watching table game managers, you're watching slot technicians. And this industry just grew on me so fast because of the amount of heart.
And I would totally agree. I definitely share the same sentiment, having grown up in Nevada and, you know, seeing that my entire life. And so obviously all of those, the experiences that we've talked about, they obviously lead to the formation of Access. And you know, that's been a journey in and of itself. What are some of the big, you know, when I say the journey so far, what are some of the biggest things that kind of pop up in your mind? What are some of the things that stick with you?
Well, I was working in Macau at the time I got the call to have a look at Access for the simple reasons that Access was like literally 10 years ahead of its time, unfortunately. And they were struggling. They weren't in the casino industry. They were just dabbling into it. They were just beginning their run into the industry. And I got back from Macau on a Friday night and I went to Sherbrooke, Quebec to see this company. And of course I didn't like the interface. I'm a maniac when it comes to that stuff. But what I saw was a database running in the cloud, doing cashless transactions. My first reaction was to completely panic because of the Wire Act. But then when I dug into the technology, I realized that it was 100% above board. But what I saw was the speed of transaction, to be able to have multiple wallets. And there were things back there, like way before 2010, that were just impressive. So they asked me to go on the board of directors because I couldn't leave my team at DEQ. The company wasn't ready because the way I work in life is I work in a place when I feel useful. When I don't feel useful, I disappear. I don't hang around for a paycheck. So the thing is the DEQ still had another phase to squeeze out of it before it was ready to live without me. And I don't want to sound facetious, but in a startup, usually the CEO does have a pivotal role, especially if you're a high-tech CEO like I am. Like, I'm hands-on, I'm not hands-off. So I was on the board of Access for about 3 years, giving them advice, guiding them, getting them ready to go into the mainstream markets. Had a really good team. CEO was doing quite well back then for the experience that he had in the gaming industry. But then in 2013, things were, for me at DEQ, things were becoming mature. Boilerplate. And Access really had all the bells and whistles I was looking for. I was looking to build an app store. I wanted to recreate what Steve Jobs did for phones. I wanted to create it in the gaming industry. And that had been my dream since the iPhone came out. Because I had the first version of the iPhone, which was called a Newton. So that's where in 2013, I took the very excruciating decision to leave my team, which is heartbreaking to leave your team behind because it's kind of like you're letting them down. But at the same time, Access had all of the right ingredients to make an amazing company. So from that point in time, it was all about just building out speed, security, redundancy, resilience. We were trying to get away from physical servers, but that was years before that just happened, about 3 or 4 years ago, that everything went stateless and everything went serverless. And of course, we were serverless and stateless like, I don't know, 12 months after the technology became available, for the very simple reason is as the world turns to cloud, you need to be able to have cloud inside of a building, inside of a phone, inside of a jurisdiction. So that was really a heavy 4 years of us lifting there. Of course, we had a whole bunch of bells and whistles back in the early days that the clients didn't want. Like, we had a players app on a phone. Nobody cared about it. We had a whole bunch of stuff in the beginning. But then came the moment when COVID hit us and the route and street market asked us to step up and help that segment adopt the same amount of tools as the casino segment, but for a fraction of the casino segment cost. And I'd say that's really where Access came to life, because everything we had was immediately adapted to the route and street market. And we kind of put a pause on the casino market. And it was only last year we just started going back in and doing casino chains and all those things, because I keep getting told that what we have in our system is the equivalent of about 17 other products together.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know that, because I have a basic rule. I don't know our competitors, and I don't care about our competitors, because my job is to listen to my clients and listen to prospective and clients. And the coolest thing about why I get paid is to solve problems. It's the funnest thing I can do in a day. We had a customer in last week saying the problem that they had, and it took all weekend to try to figure out a solution for them. But in my best guess, in about 5 or 6 weeks, they're going to have a complete jackpot monitoring solution for their machines that SaaS cannot do. But we figured it out on the weekend.
Wow. So,
I love Access for the simple reason is that we never say no. Clients come in explaining to us that they're losing money because of this reason, or something's going wrong in their operations and they need it fixed. And you'll just see like 3 or 4 people run to the whiteboard and they're all designing this out. And at the end of about a couple of hours, I'm just sitting there in awe of the collective genius. So that's really the Access that I love to be the part that I play.
And that's really well said. And you know, the leadership aspect is obviously so important when you reach that level. And you know, in some of our conversations so far, we've talked a lot about very long-term thinking and kind of years in the future. But in terms of our purposes here, obviously it's for 2023. So the way I would want to phrase it is like, If this is somebody's first introduction to you or your company, what should they be looking out for in 2023 specifically?
So access in 2023 is simple. It's only three things for the general public. It's number one, marrying all of the cashless components together so that there is no clunky chunkiness. In other words, if you go to a kiosk, if you go to an ATM machine, if you're using the Players app, if you're using a smart card, if you have a Players account, there are things that we've been doing forever, but in 2023, it's being able to offer one product that when the client plugs into it, it plugs into their kiosks, it plugs into their ATM machines. If they want to add in their own Players app, we plug into that. So one of the biggest deliveries that we did in 2022 was our real-time stateless data warehouse, not an ETL data warehouse, but a real-time data warehouse, which means is that my vision from the beginning and what my team and I share as a vision is that we will never be all to everybody. But we want to make sure that the real-time speed data is available for Uber apps, for anything else. So now that we brought up the data warehouse, the speed at which we can connect kiosks, other people's apps, other people's tools, because that's really laying out the basement for the future of our app store. So that's the reason why we did it this year. So cashless is actually going to become a thing next year. We did not want to be first in the US with the app because we wanted to see the jurisdictional friction. We wanted to see the client friction. Now that we've seen enough, our app that's running elsewhere in the world, we're just tuning it to the USA culture right now. And it's going to be out in full production probably in January.
Okay.
Even though it's been out in pieces forever, the whole app that's really focused on loyalty and rewards more than anything else, because bringing money in from the open loop and into a machine, that's just a money transportation system. Mm-hmm. As you can see, as the fees go from like $5 to free, that's that price elasticity is sending that to free in the next few years. Whereas all of that customer-centric data gives you the richest insight into who your client is and how can you serve them better. So that's the second thing we're doing this year. We really worked hard on getting the pieces of our data that our customers need in real time to be available all the time in real time with push alerts, with notifications and things like that, so that our customers can set up the way they want to run their business. And the third and the final piece of what this year is we've got, I take a guess of about 60,000 screens out in the market that don't have DOOH, digital out-of-home publicity, on them. So about 3 years ago, we started to do an acquisition to prepare post-COVID. And post-COVID for us was ripping out all of those screens that don't make any money for our clients and us. And we started out this August to retool all of our media screens all over the world so that they're hooked into the Googles, they're hooked into the Yahoos, they're hooked into all of the major media outlets, so that you could be sitting at a slot machine and BMW is buying publicity, Uber is buying publicity, Netflix is buying publicity. And that's just another part of our vision of, yes, a slot machine generates money because people play it. But we want that machine to be able to generate money for other reasons. And digital out-of-home publicity is a no-brainer. Mm. And that's one of the ways our customers that already have the technology that we pay for, we don't charge for it. We just rip out the screens, put in the new ones, and then we share the ad revenue as it comes in from the major providers. So cashless first, business intelligence second, and monetizing those media seconds third. That's really our focus next year. There's a lot of other bells and whistles coming, but really, if you want to know what is the great value adds to our customers, it's those three.
Awesome. Well, another great conversation, Earl. Thank you so much for joining me today. I had a great time, and congratulations again. And myself, and I'm sure a lot of other people will be very curious to see what's in store for you and Access in 2023 and beyond.
Thanks so much. And again, on behalf of my team and myself, I'm very humbled to represent them with this honor. It's a big thing for me and my team, because we try to work a lot behind the scenes, because we're not really the most visible company in the world. That's part of our culture. But this one really hits straight in the center of our heart. So I know the entire team is really pumped that we were even considered, as a matter of fact. So thank you so much.
You know I'll be standing by to help you with your worries. No more sadness.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast sponsored by IGT, where the cat's out of the bag. IGT's Prosperity Link wins gold and is named Best Slot Product by GGB's Gaming and Technology Awards. Get this top performer on your floor today. Discover more at igt.com/prosperitylink. To learn more about artificial intelligence, blockchain, making real-time decisions in the gaming industry, visit ggbmagazine.com. Subscribe to GGB News to get all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning. Sign up at ggbnews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.